Bowl edition of the Adam Schefter podcast, we are joined by the sporting soundtrack of our lives, Al Michaels, the play-by-play man for NBC, who will be calling this Sunday's Super Bowl 52, the 10th Super Bowl in his legendary career, second most all-time behind only Pat Summerall. Al has called Super Bowls, World Series, Earthquakes, NBA Finals, Stanley Cup Finals for network TV. He'll be coming at us Sunday with the call of Super Bowl 52 on NBC. Plus, we'll be joined by the ESPN NFL stats maven, Evan Kaplan, who will provide us additional perspective into Super Bowl 52, and we'll take your voicemails in the latest edition of Ask Adam. But first, NBC play-by-play man, the legendary Al Michaels. Al!
Adam, how are you?
It is great to hear from you.
Did you pass concussion protocol?
Well, it was funny. When I got back to my desk on Sunday, the one email was from a one concerned Al Michaels, who we had been trying to reach anyway. It was kind of ironic the way that all happened. I appreciate your concern and thoughtfulness.
All it took is for you to slip and fall on an icy driveway.
How are you doing?
Good. I mean, that happened to me like 35 years ago. I was doing UCLA basketball. We were in Pullman, Washington.
Yep.
And I walked out of the motel we were staying at, and you know, my legs came out from under me and hit the back of my head. Whoa, Nelly!
To this day, I
crouch down when I get on anything slippery or icy. So I can't wait to get to Minnesota where I can probably, you know, die before the game. But anyway.
Be very careful. Yep. We cannot have you getting hurt before your 10th Super Bowl call. We cannot have that.
Cannot do it. And Tirico is going to already be in South Korea, so we don't even have backup available.
Oh, okay. Well, hey, listen.
Yep.
If you want, I'm willing to step in. I've backed up for you guys before when
you
had all your people. That was one of the great thrills of my career. So if you're stuck and you need somebody, you ask ESPN. I'm happy to sign up.
Well, that was fun. Remember that walk back from that restaurant?
Yes.
In D.C. was, oh, my God.
You know, I went back into my journal to recall the joke that you were telling to the people on the street, because I remember being hysterical laughing all night long.
What was the joke? I forgot.
Well, it's not fit for even this podcast, Al. It was about a doctor.
Email it to me.
Yes, I will. I don't even think I got it right in my journal, because when I read it, I said, oh, that's funny, but I remember laughing all night long about it.
It was crazy.
Yeah, that was a very fun night, and that was a huge honor for me. And again, it's a huge honor to get you today.
Sure.
And I appreciate it. I want to say to you, this Super Bowl, when you do the play-by-play for this will be almost 30 years to the day of your very first Super Bowl call, Super Bowl 22, when Washington beat Denver. Can you have thought at that point in time that you would be getting ready to do 10 Super Bowls over 30 years?
No chance, Adam, because at that point, the rights were coming up like every 2 or 3 years for the networks. And it was my understanding when I took over Monday Night Football in 1986, and we knew we were in the rotation, we were going to get the 1987 Super Bowl, but I thought we might not renew the package when it came up again in 1990, because I was hearing a lot of feedback from the executives, and this show was a lost leader, even though it was the highest rated show on ABC. And maybe we're spending too much money for it. I mean, that hasn't changed in 30 years. You're still hearing the network saying that same thing.
Yep.
But I recall that being the case, and I thought, you know, this may be a one-and-done thing.
Yeah.
And then I guess there were like 3 or 4 different iterations when I was at ABC all of those years. And I wound up doing 6 Super Bowls there and 3 so far at NBC. And this is going to be number 4.
And which one stands out to you as the best one that you've called, would you say?
2 of them, Adam. I mean, number 1 would be in 2008, the 2008 season in Tampa, when Arizona gets into the game and everybody's saying, how in the world did they get here against the Steelers? And that game was so great because it looked like the Steelers were going to maybe run away at one point. And I think what people forget is that Arizona kept it a 2-possession game with a double goal line stand. What happened was Pittsburgh's, you know, inside the 10, they stop him, but then Adrian Wilson has a personal foul. Now you got a first and goal again. They stop him again, limit him to a field goal, and then Arizona gets hot, and Fitzgerald is over the middle and catches that, you know, 50-yard bomb from Kurt Warner, or a 50-yard slant anyway. a lot of yards after the catch on that. And the Cardinals have the lead. And then Ben leads the Steelers back down where Santonio Holmes makes that unbelievable catch in the corner of the end zone. And also in that game, and maybe the greatest defensive play in the history of the Super Bowl, along with the Malcolm Butler interception, when James Harrison runs the interception back 100 yards at the end of the half.
Oh, yeah.
And how he was able to do that, total exhaustion. Everybody on the Cardinals is trying to chase him down. Larry Fitzgerald's running through the bench. I think I said he just ran through the whole state of Arizona. And then if he gets knocked out at the one-yard line, they're out of time. They can't even kick a field goal. So that game is fantastic. That game is wonderful. The Seattle-New England game with the Butler interception at the end would be the other game. But the other thing, I think my favorite game might be that 08 game, Adam, because for the reasons I mentioned, topped off by, it turned out to be the last game that John Madden broadcast.
Oh,
and
wow.
I did not know that. Now, John and I had worked together for 7 years, four at ABC on Monday and three at NBC on Sunday, and I didn't know, you know, that John was going to step aside. And he didn't make that choice until April. And quintessential John, he just said, it's time. And so I really wanted to relish and savor that. I didn't know it was going to be his last game. But I look back on that as a day of days. And I think, you know, Fred Godelli and Drew Esikoff, our whole production crew, they hit every note. It was great. And I would think that's maybe my favorite telecast of all time.
Do you still get as fired up to do a Super Bowl as you did 30 years ago?
Definitely. Adam, I still get fired up to do Sunday Night Football.
Well, you should.
Because Sunday Night Football is, we treat it like a mini Super Bowl every week. It's the number one show on television for seven straight years. We always get a big audience. You know, we get a great schedule of games. And we really push ourselves. We're very much like a football team where, you know, everybody comes to work prepared to do a telecast better than we've ever done it before. And we don't care what happened. You know, last night, on a Monday, we don't sit there and go, hey, that was a great show last night. No, we're on to the next Sunday. And that's the way we operate. That's the way we look at it. I've got one of the greatest jobs that was ever created. And you know that people would give, you know, any appendage, millions of, you know, guys and women, just to have this opportunity. I've got it. It's been, you know, my job for over three decades now, doing the number one game in the NFL, and believe me, there's nobody more appreciative than me, and I want to make sure that, you know, I'm in stride with my guys. I mean, everybody's going all out. Everybody's working crazy hours all week long. So when we get to the Super Bowl, you know, it's Sunday night. Obviously, the audience is going to be four or five times bigger, but we're going to pretty much prepare for this game the way we do for a regular Sunday night game.
John Madden snuck out in April on us. How much longer do you want to do this, Al? You sneaking out on us anytime soon?
Well, you know, the deal is this, Adam. I knock on wood or whatever. I'm sitting on an upholstered chair right now. I'm knocking on everything I can touch. I have good health. I feel great. In my brain, I'm still a bit of a rascal. You know, I like to goof. I like to laugh. I like to have fun. So in my brain, I don't know what I am, 19, 20 years old. My body is, you know, probably mid-40s, but if I take some Advil, then I'm back down to, you know, like 32.
Yeah.
So I feel great. I'm working with the greatest people in this business, the best, top to bottom. You know, Chris Collinsworth, what can I say? Michelle Tafoya, we talked about Freddie and Drew.
Yeah.
These are the best. I've worked with everybody, and I'm loving it. And the thing about me, Adam, is that when I was a six-year-old, my father walked me into Ebbets Field in Brooklyn, and it was like a Goo Goo Gaga moment where, you know, my eyes opened wide, and it was like, wow, I just want to be here for the rest of my life. And it turned out that I was able to pretty much do that for the rest of my life. So I still get a thrill and a charge walking into a stadium and getting ready for a big game. I love it. I'm blessed to be able to do this as long as I've been able to do it. And, you know, look, at some point, I know this. I will not, if I can't do it the way I want to do it, Adam, I'll know before anybody else knows. I'll go, you know what? I just can't get there anymore the way I want to do it. And I would be the one to step aside. So hopefully I never have to be told that, and I can make that choice down the line.
But no end in sight, right, Al? To your knowledge, no end in sight.
Not right now. I mean, I can't look ahead and say, oh, I'm going to do this for 10 years or whatever. Yeah. So right now, all I'm doing is pretty much just looking ahead to next year for sure. Keep it going. You know, take some time off, of course, in the off season, and get right back at it because I love doing this. So I don't, you know, Marv Levy once told me, and I'm not sure whether Marv invented the line or whether he stole it or borrowed it from somebody else, but when I asked Marv about retiring when he was toward the end of his career, he said, if you think about retirement, you've already retired. And I'll never forget him saying that. So I don't even want to think about it. And I'm not sure John Madden necessarily thought about it when he stepped aside. Remember, it took John, 3 months or so to finally make the choice. So I think he wanted to get through that season and then think about it, assess it, see where he was in life and all of the rest, and then make his choice. So, I mean, I'm sitting here right now talking to you, and there's no thought in my mind to step aside.
Let me ask you this question. If you were to step aside 15 years, 20 years from now, whenever, and I hope you're in the booth as long as you can be, there's nobody better than you at doing this, and maybe nobody who has ever been better. What would you envision your life like without having to do Sunday Night Football? More golf, more Los Angeles Kings game, more time with the family? What would it be for Al Michaels?
Well, you've got my life down. It's real simple. You know exactly what I do. You know, Adam, look, I'm able to – I have enough time off that I can do those things. I can play enough golf. And I, you know, I have four grandkids who I just adore.
Yep.
And I can still spend a ton of time with them. You know, I've been married to the same fantastic woman for, you know, over half a century. We are so thankful that you know, life turned out this way for us. So, you know, what's going to happen after that? I don't know. I don't want to think about it because I've kind of spent my whole life, I mean, starting at the age of 22 and I'm doing minor league baseball in Hawaii, and I've never missed a paycheck. You know, I went from Hawaii to the Cincinnati Reds to the San Francisco Giants, the ABC for 30 years, the NBC for going on 13 now. So I don't know what it's like to take a sabbatical. And frankly, yeah, I'd be a little nervous about what's going to happen when it happens. And that's why I'm not thinking about it for the most part.
You know, you bring up all those jobs and all that work, all that time with what you did. And I look at everything that you've done, all the events that you've covered. You're the only commentator to call the Super Bowl, World Series, NBA Final, Stanley Cup Final for network television. What are you most proud of when you look back at this Hall of Fame career, Al?
I think just being consistent, Adam. I mean, that's how I look at it. I mean, if you were to say to me, you know, what's the one favorite event of all time? There's no question. It's the U.S. defeating the Soviet Union in the 1980 Olympics and in hockey, and then going on to beat Finland and win the gold medal. I got to live the ultimate moment.
The puck is still loose. 11 seconds. You've got 10 seconds. The countdown going on right now. Morrow up to Schultz. 5 seconds left in the game. Do you believe in miracles? Yes!
I mean, Sports Illustrated ranked that the greatest sports moment of the 20th century in America. And I'm the guy who called the game. So I think of that. I put that up on a shelf. I've done so many. We talked about the Super Bowls. It's an unbelievable, unbelievably dramatic and thrilling baseball games. I did the Hagler-Hearns fight in 1985, which was off the charts. Kentucky Derbies, hosted that. Hosted the Indianapolis 500 a few times. A lot of stuff. And you know what's interesting? Sometimes you forget what you've done. And it's my wife and I about a week ago. We got the DVD of I, Tonya, the movie, which is out now, about Tonya Harding. We watched it, and I had forgotten for a moment that I was there to announce the triple axel. She did. Now, I mean, it's like Zelig. So, you go. Now, the movie didn't use us. They recreated it. And then I went onto YouTube, and there are a whole bunch of clips from it. And there I am in my tuxedo. Setting it up, and I'm working with Dick Button and Peggy Fleming. Wow. And there it was. So, I mean, that's one of those things that kind of slipped through the cracks there in terms of, that's right, I was there, Target Center, Minneapolis, 1991. So it's kind of crazy. But I think, maybe the thing that makes me, glow the most is I've had, like I say, a fantastic family. This is a business where it's not that easy with all the traveling and the craziness and all of that to hold it together. But look, I'm just lucky to have one of the greatest families of all time.
There's a lot of follow-ups I have from there. But the first one is the hockey game. How often do people remind you of that call these days?
Quite a bit. And it's funny because, I'll see a father who's maybe 50 years old who would remember it. And he has a 15-year-old in tow with him. And you can tell that the child has been taught by the father about the story. And then most of the kids now, they've seen the movie Miracle, which was, they really did a really good job. I worked on it with the director, Gavin O'Connor. And look, they took some literary license, of course, but that movie was really good, and I thought it captured the essence of what took place in Lake Placid. So almost all these kids have now seen it. I mean, coaches use that the night before a game. You know, they play the tape. So that, to me, is it's just a standalone thing. People are coming up all the time. We were I did when I was doing Thursday night football in addition to Sunday last year, not this past season, but in 2016, we did a game in Baltimore. We got on a plane and landed in Boston at 2 o'clock in the morning. Went into the hotel and there are three guys standing outside with photos of Lake Placid. Can you sign this?
Wow!
So it's a moment that. It's just, it's the greatest. People love to talk about it, and I never really get tired of talking to people about it.
Did you grasp the significance of it as it was happening right then and there that day, Al?
Not really. It took a while because, first of all, I was working with Ken Dryden, the great Montreal goalie.
Yep.
And we walked over. Our hotel was just a few blocks from the arena. We walked over, and our conversation was along the lines of, we're just fearful of a blowout. Maybe if the Soviets only lead like 3-1 late in the second period, that wouldn't be so terrible. And so the way the game unfolded, you really didn't have time to put that in perspective at that moment. And when you look at that game, the Soviets really dominated the play. They outshot the U.S., people forget this, 39-16. That's a 2.5-1 ratio. And the Soviets led 1-0, 2-1, and 3-2. And then the U.S. ties the game, and then Ruggioni scores with 10 minutes to go in the third. So the whole game was like, in and of itself, forget what's going on around it, was unbelievable. And then when it all is over and the game ends, and most of the country saw this on tape because it was a 5 o'clock game, and the Russian Federation wouldn't move the game to 8. So most of the country doesn't know what's happened. We play the tape at 8 o'clock. But in those years, I mean, it's like 37 years ago,
yep.
Adam, and in those years, you were always worried that there'd be a technical snafu. So Rune Arledge had Dryden and me stay at the arena, and at 8 o'clock, we announced the Sweden-Finland game into a tape machine.
Wow.
Meanwhile, people are outside going crazy in the street, and we're doing a game that's going nowhere. So it was hard to assess the game in terms of the perspective. But I do know that on Sunday night, after the U.S. had won the Finland game to clinch the gold.
Yep, I remember that.
And Jim McKay brought all of the announcers from the various venues in, and he sat with me and he said, do you think this will, this will have, I can't remember the exact words, but will it last? Will this thing have legs and go on? And I said to Jim, I didn't want to say yes for sure, but I said, Jim, everything needs a little time. I said, we come off of an event and go, wow, that's the greatest thing ever. Nothing ever topped that. We don't know. I said, I think this will last. And in fact, in my brain, I was sure it would last. By Sunday night, I began to feel what was going on. I mean, the whole country, and what was happening at that point. Hostages being held in Iran, gas lines. Everybody's upset about everything at that point.
Yeah.
And Soviets had invaded Afghanistan. We're threatening to boycott the Olympics, which we do. They pay us back in 84. So at that point, you could sort of sense this was not just a hockey game. This was, I hate to say it, the Cold War on a sheet of ice.
You know, you were going through and recounting all the scores from that game, and you were counting all the plays from the Cardinals-Steelers Super Bowl. And I know every coach seems to recall every play from every game, and I could recall stories, events around stories that I reported on over time. Do you remember specific plays from specific games as far back as you can remember?
Yes. not everything, but I've been blessed with a memory. It kind of unfolds like a tapestry, maybe, where I can see the year and I can feel where I was that year. When I was doing the Cincinnati Reds, 71, 2, and 3, I mean, I'm a kid.
Yeah.
And I'm the number one announcer for the Big Red Machine. And I've got Pete Rose in his prime, Johnny Bench coming into his prime, Tony Perez in his prime, Joe Morgan getting traded over to the Reds in 72, Davey Concepcion, Sparky Anderson managing. Wow, I mean, I'm the kid in the candy store here. I have a major league job in my mid-20s, and I've got the Big Red Machine.
That's amazing.
So I can remember, you know, once in a while I'll go back and look at like a box score from one of those years, but I can feel it. I'm able to, in my fiber, I guess, I remember, what, you know, I remember there was a tremendous home run hit by Hal King, a backup catcher, and a doubleheader against the Dodgers. I can still see it in my brain. It hit the foul pole screen at Riverfront Stadium. So I go back and I look at this and I can visualize it, and I can almost feel it. Now, I'm lucky in the sense that it's not everything, obviously, but I can remember so many things, and I've been there for so many events. That
vivid.
It's kind of cool, yeah. I'm on my own YouTube thread. What can I tell you?
It's part of the genius of Al Michaels. There's plenty more to that. You brought up Jim McKay before. You brought up John Madden.
Yeah.
I know you've worked with Keith Jackson, some of the great. Who would be on your Mount Rushmore of broadcasters? I got four spots on that wall. And by the way, I'm going to give one to you because you do belong there. Who are the other three guys that are going on there?
You know, you're very kind, and you know, I'm going to leave somebody out, but you start with Vin Scully.
Okay.
You just have to. I mean, Vinny did this for 67 years, which, and by the way, I draw a lot of inspiration from Vin Scully, who I've listened to my entire life. He's a good friend. He lives 8 or 9 miles from me. I see him for lunch every, you know, couple of months.
Wow.
And he was doing, at 88, he was as good as he was at 38, 48, any age. I mean, he was great. He could have gone on. So there's nobody who's ever done baseball the way Vinny did. And by the way, he didn't go out, you know, with a puff of smoke. He went out. He's still at the top of his game. So I draw great inspiration from Vinny. Living out here, you know, basketball, I've always said that, you know, Chick Hearn and Marv Albert are the best basketball announcers I've ever heard. No question. Hockey, Doc Emmerich is in a class by himself. Nobody does a hockey game the way Doc Emmerich does it. He's phenomenal.
He is.
Fantastic.
He is. There's some great broadcast. What about Keith Jackson, Pat Summerall?
Definitely. Oh, yeah. I mean, like I say, I'm going to leave somebody out here.
I'm trying to help you along. Yeah.
You're going to love this Keith Jackson story. So Keith, you know, Keith was a little, you know, Keith could be bombastic. And he put words together that nobody else could put those words in that sequence. And he was doing an interview, I think, with the student newspaper at the University of Oregon about 20 years ago. And the student reporter in a Q&A said, well, Mr. Jackson, you know, you've really had a tremendous career. You've done just about everything. Do you have any more goals? And only the way Keith could do it, he said, yep, just one. I don't want to die in an airport parking lot.
That's pretty good.
How do you come up? So I'm happy to report that Keith died peacefully, you know, at home in Sherman Oaks. I had a lot of fun with Keith, but yeah, he put words together like nobody else could. I work with Cosell. That's a whole, a complete different animal. I had Frank Gifford, Dan Dierup,
wow.
Tim McCarver. I love Tim McCarver. My guys, you think about John Madden and Chris Collinsworth.
Yeah.
I've said this a bunch of times. I had DiMaggio and he retired and I got Mantle. That's how I look at it. I've had these guys for 16 years.
They're phenomenal. They are phenomenal. They're great at what they do, and I love. I've said this to you, and I said this to Fred, and I said it to Chris. But I love on Sunday nights getting done with our day at ESPN and watching the games and coming back to watch your game because it does feel like a Super Bowl. Every week feels like a Super Bowl when I watch on Sunday nights, and I sincerely mean that too.
Well, so, you kind of say that, but I give a lot of the credit to Freddie on that. I mean, Freddie, he there's nothing that he doesn't think about, and I mean, he's almost like. You know, I don't know if you've been to, you know, Patriot practices, but we've been in a few through the years. And I watch Brady, and Brady doesn't let a play get run at 99%. He'll stop it. I mean, either Belichick will stop it or Brady will stop it.
Yep.
He'll stop it. Hey, we're going to do it at 100%. There's no 99%.
And that's right.
I mean, if you're 15 inches off in running a route, we're going to do it again. And Freddie's kind of the same way in terms of he leaves no stone unturned. On this show, and it's just phenomenal.
You should do a book on memories of broadcasters. I know you've written your own book of your own life, but if you could just recall all the stories about all these broadcasters, that would be captivating reading and something that you should do, Al. You ever think about that?
You want a sequel?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it'd be a great book.
I appreciate that.
I love that stuff. I appreciate those guys and everything that they did and what they meant to our country and our culture and our history. And that just fascinated. Broadcasters always have fascinated me.
Well, and me too. But when I did that book, it was a root canal. And it was tough. And I slaved over, you know, I had John Wertheim working with me, and I had Bruce Kornblatt and Aaron Cohen from NBC as well. I had to get everything in my voice. Yeah. So I slaved over every word and made sure every story was 1,000% accurate. So as I say, it was like going to the dentist for 3 years. When it came out, I was very, very happy. But then somebody said, the publisher said, how about a sequel? And I said, not at gunpoint.
No way. You mentioned Tom Brady going to Patriot practices. This will be the third Belichick Brady Super Bowl that you've called
in a row.
What's the most impressive thing about their run to you?
Oh boy, it's like it's hand in glove. I mean, it's been talked about so much. I don't know if I could put an original wording on this, Adam. I mean, you watch them; it's like it's perfection. It's they want to be perfect, and they damn near are, and other teams do too. I know they want to be perfect, but I mean, I hate this thing about who's the greatest of all time. We don't know the greatest of all time. You have different eras and all of that. It was Joe Montana better than Otto Graham? I have no idea. I didn't see Otto Graham play. So I do know that these guys, they are in it, and they are in it 1,000%, 1,000%, and. It's an amazing, it's just an amazing pairing and partnership. And with Belichick, again, I don't want to say who's the greatest coach of all time. You can argue it, but I mean, clearly he's right there. He's in the conversation, of course. Brady, is he the greatest quarterback of all time? Obviously, in the conversation. So I don't got to, I mean, sometimes you get into that number one, number two, and then guys just want to argue with you. Oh, no, this guy was, how do they know? Nobody knows. I mean, when Sports Century was done at ESPN in the end of the 90s, and I was on the panel to select into the best events, best athletes, and all of the rest, and it came down to the best athlete of the 20th century. And I was thinking, I mean, look, was it Michael Jordan? Was it Muhammad Ali? Was it Wayne Gretzky? Was it Babe Ruth? And I went back and I looked at Jim Thorpe. And I went, wait a second. Here's a guy who played pro football, pro baseball, Olympic gold medals. He did everything.
Yeah.
He did everything. I never saw him. But, you know, the problem these days, as you know, is that
it's so instantaneous.
It's not on television. It doesn't exist.
Yeah.
So we don't get to see Jim Thorpe. But I wrote down Jim Thorpe figuring, man, look what this guy did. Amazing.
Huh. You know, my dad, on Monday, we were talking, and he said to me something that surprised me. He, like you, is 73 years old. Mm-hmm. And he said to me, this is the greatest team, the Patriots, that I've ever seen in my life. And I've heard him talk about the UCLA teams, and I grew up watching the Yankee teams, and the Lakers, and the Celtics, and the Bulls. And you come up with whichever team you want. The New York Islanders were the team of my youth growing up on Long Island. You know that well.
Sure.
Could this Patriot team, in your mind, be talked about as the best team that we've seen? That seems like a lot.
We'll put them into the conversation because, you've had a 17-year run. That's almost unheard of. Now, what's interesting is that, and nobody really talks too much about the 49ers. If you go through their two decades, that was pretty good in the 80s and 90s. I mean, that was, they were, you know better than anybody, with Walsh, to Seifert, and then down the line with Montana and Young. I mean, they're in, they're sort of in a conversation here, too. But when you consider that the Patriots, I mean, what, seven straight AFC championship games?
Yeah.
Trying to win another Super Bowl, and all with the same coach and quarterback and same owner. And, there's no doubt. So I'm not sure that this particular 2017-18 Patriot team is the best team of all time. But when you consider the whole 17 years, I mean, yeah. I mean, that's a dynasty. There's no two ways to put it.
They've been unbelievable. Al, we've talked about all the events that you have done. Is there any one event or game that you wish you could be the play-by-play announcer for these days, or have you done everything, which you have?
You know, I've pretty much done everything. I always felt going into last year's Super Bowl on Fox, I wanted to do the first overtime Super Bowl. And I'm sitting there at home. It's 28-3, and I'm composing in my head a sympathetic email to both Aikman and Joe Buck. I've written it in my head going, I can't believe you guys got that Seattle-Denver dog at MetLife 3 years ago, and now you guys get this game. So, you know, I'm thinking about it, and then it's 28-9, and it's like 28-6. I'm going, whoa, what's happening here? And when I saw they're flipping the coin for the overtime, the coin toss. I'm going, wait a minute, stop. I want to do this game. So that was the one thing. So I guess now, Adam, the only thing I can think of is I think I'd like to do, like, the longest game in the history of football.
Yep.
So if we can get into, like, triple overtime, I'll be very happy.
And you can withstand. See, and here's the other factoid that a lot of people don't realize about you. 73, going strong, have done everything in the sport, and has never eaten a vegetable or doesn't eat vegetables in his life now.
And you've had meals with me, and you know that's true, right?
Oh, I know that's, and that blew me away, that you could be in the shape you are.
You saw me in Washington a few years back. I know. Don't ask me how. Don't ask me why. But man does not need vegetables to survive. That's all I can tell you.
I think you are living proof of that, that you have defied the idea that you need 5 servings of fruits and vegetables a day.
Correct. Correct. I mean, look, we've lived long enough, I have certainly, that whatever was good for you was bad for you, then it became good for you again, then it became bad. So, I mean, it's all over the place. Every 5 years, something that was bad becomes good, something that was good becomes bad. So all I can say is that I don't even like the look of vegetables. I can look at a salad because it's not cooked, but if I'm sitting at a table, as I was last night with some people, and the guy ordered, like, you know, mushrooms, hot mushrooms on top of whatever the hell he ordered, I'm going, get me out of here. And I was downwind, too. That wasn't very, very pleasant.
So what is Al Michaels' meal of choice, being that you won't eat vegetables?
A big old steak. You know that.
Yeah.
I love a big, juicy steak. I eat potatoes, and that's not a vegetable. That's really a starch. I do love pasta.
Yeah, well, me too.
Fish is good, but to me, I've been around the world eating steak, and I mean, I've got my, you know, 3 or 4 favorite places in the world, and that would be it. I mean, I can have steak like 4 nights a week, 5 nights a week. In fact, I got a big old juicy steak coming up tonight at a place out here called Capo in Santa Monica.
Mm, so, sounds good.
You know, my mouth is already watering, and you know, I love crab and shrimp and I'll chicken, but veggies.
No. Yeah. Al, I want to thank you for the time. I want to thank you for all the thrills. I want to thank you for all the work that you do on TV on behalf of all fans who listen. Everything, just tremendous. Have a great Super Bowl 52. Millions will be watching. Millions will be thrilled. And we really thank you for the time today very, very much.
Adam, keep up the great work. You do terrific work. And I will see you in Minneapolis.
And I look forward to that, Al.
I'll be the guy with the hat with earmuffs and the scarf.
So will everybody else.
So will everybody else. Be good, man.
Thanks, okay. Al.
You bet.
The calls you heard earlier come to us courtesy of ABC Sports.
We'll be back in a moment with our cap hit and your Ask Adam questions. But first, a word from ZipRecruiter. What if hiring could be easier? So even when you're busy, you can still be smart about how you hire. ZipRecruiter posts your job to over 100 job boards with just one click. Then they actively look for the most qualified candidates and invite them to apply. No wonder 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. Right now, my listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/knowthem. That's ZipRecruiter.com/knowthem. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Cap hit.
Once again, for the final week of the 2017-18 season, we are joined by the ESPN NFL stats maven, Evan Kaplan, who's here to provide a little perspective on Super Bowl 52 and what we might see on Sunday. Thanks for joining us, Evan.
Thanks for having me again, Adam.
Appreciate that. And we know that the Patriots slot receiver has been a mainstay in the offense this year. But how do we put into perspective how important the slot receiver has become for Tom Brady and the Patriots?
Simply put, Tom Brady is relying on the slot receiver more than ever. So this postseason, four of his five touchdown passes have been thrown to receivers who lined up in the slot. And if you look over the last two seasons, including the playoffs, 43% of Brady's touchdown passes have been thrown to guys who lined up in the slot. So we're talking about Edelman when he's healthy, and now Amendola, who's really picked up the slack this postseason. And as we look ahead to Sunday, postseason NFL countdown, we're actually going to have a feature looking back at the history of the slot receiver in New England. Should be a really interesting piece.
Well, that should be good. How much do you subscribe to the theory that getting pressure on Tom Brady is the key to beating the Patriots?
We've heard a lot over the last 2 weeks going back to the AFC Championship, but when you look at the numbers, it's really where the pressure comes from, and the pressure's got to be in his face up the middle. So since the 2007 playoffs, the Patriots are 4-6 when Brady is sacked by an interior lineman, so defensive tackle, nose tackle, etc., 11-1 when he's not sacked by one of those positions. You look at the Eagles, Fletcher Cox, simply put, one of the best interior linemen in the league, so Josh McDaniels putting together that game plan, obviously blocking Fletcher Cox will be one of the keys for New England.
What do you think the Patriots' slow starts have been about in the Super Bowl? I mean, this has been crazy, everyone, when you look at it.
It really is. As we've heard over the last week or so, Tom Brady has never thrown a touchdown pass in the first quarter in his Super Bowl career.
Hard to imagine
it
that.
It really is. But if you look over the last four postseasons, it's really the first half versus the second half split. First half for Brady since the 2004 playoffs, 10 touchdown passes, 7 interceptions. Not bad, but not great.
Mm-hmm.
Second
Average.
Half, 15 touchdown passes, 2 interceptions. So that's a big reason why they won Super Bowl 49 and a big reason why they won Super Bowl 51, his ability to close.
And the big reason that Tom Brady will go down as the greatest quarterback of all times because that second half Super Bowl touchdown record is unbelievable, 15 touchdowns.
Absolutely.
Who does that? All right, one of the wild cards in Super Bowl 52 could be the Eagles' head coach, Doug Peterson. How do you think his thinking affects this game, Evan?
This is really something to keep an eye on. So the Eagles were the most aggressive team during the regular season and the playoffs. If you look at fourth down conversions, the Eagles have converted 18 fourth downs this season. That's the most in the NFL. But Peterson can be so aggressive on offense because of his defense. So they were 18 of 27 on fourth down, including the playoffs. The 9 times they didn't convert, the defense did not allow a single point on the next drive. So Peterson knows that when he goes for it, even if the Eagles don't get it, he knows his defense is going to back him up. An interesting kind of discussion on the Eagles' aggressiveness that we're also going to get into for Minneapolis on Sunday.
And what kind of game are you expecting on Sunday, Evan? With all your numbers, all crunched up in the stat machine, the Evan Kaplan stat machine, what kind of game are we going to get here?
When the Patriots play in the Super Bowl with Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, it comes down to the end. I mean, there's nothing that refutes that in the numbers. There's 7 Super Bowls since the 2001 season. They've all been decided by 6 or fewer points. And if you look at overall in Super Bowl history, there have been 17 games where there was a lead change in the fourth quarter or overtime. 7 of those 17 games have involved Tom Brady and Bill Belichick's Patriots. So we've seen it before, and I'd expect it to be a close game down to the end on Sunday.
Evan, I thank you for your time and your insight this and every week this season. It's been a lot of fun. Appreciate all the knowledge.
Thanks a lot, Adam. It's been great.
Ask Adam.
Ask Adam.
Ask Adam.
Ask Adam.
Ask Adam. We should ask Adam.
We should ask Adam. And luckily, there are a lot of people who enjoyed our inaugural voicemail segment last week, Adam. So we had to fire it up again.
They liked it, Josh. That was the reaction.
People love hearing the sound of their own voice, Adam.
Come well, that's on. Nice.
It's a narcissistic society, so we're going to let them continue to do so. We got a lot more voicemails, so let's get it kicked off without further ado.
Hey, Adam, how you doing? This is Dominic Wise calling out of Manhattan Beach, California. My question is, what do you think John Gruden is going to do first order of business with free agency? Are they going to go offensive line, get a pass rusher, or are they going to go secondary in free agency? And who do you think the Raiders are going to target with that number 9 or 10th pick? I know it's a coin flip in the first round and also top of the second round. Thanks, buddy.
Dominic's got a lot of questions on the Raiders, and the fact of the matter is I think one leads into the other. I think that there'll be obvious players that John Gruden knows during free agency that he'd like to go after, the Gruden grinder sort of crowd. That's his kind of player. They have a little cap flexibility, but keep in mind here that I think the Raiders' offseason priority is going to be going to re-sign a guy like Khalil Mack who needs a big deal. And then once you do something like that, with all the ramifications there, there's fallout in how much money you have left over. I think he'd like to get another wide receiver in there. I know that people say, whoa, what's that? But I think they need somebody to be a stable force there to provide some consistency at the wide receiver position. It would not surprise me if they went and got a running back as well, somebody that could bring a little juice to that offense right now. I think that's an issue. The offensive line you brought up, yes. More of a pass rush, yes. Defensive backs, yes. There's a lot of needs there. So, again, it all depends on what they do in free agency. I don't have the guy right now, Dominic, that I could say to you, boy, the Raiders are going to go after cornerback X or wide receiver Y. We don't know that right now. I think they're formulating that. They have been putting together a staff. I don't know if they know it right now. And then, of course, who they sign up for agency will dictate what positions they address in the draft.
It's funny that you brought up free agency and wide receivers. What do you think is queued up on the voicemail next?
Hello, this is Grant Kiefer. I would like to know, where do you guys think Jarvis Landry will end up in free agency this season, or will he stay with the Miami Dolphins? Thank you, Adam.
I would say this. I'm not optimistic he's going to be back in Miami. I think that Miami has money invested in Kenny Stills, has a first-round draft pick invested in Devontae Parker, who was inconsistent last year, but they believe has the chance to have a lot of upside right now. They've got some young wide receivers that flashed at the end of the year. Jarvis Landry is a great player, a great player. He's going to want a lot of money. But go back to the trade deadline last year when they traded Jay Ajayi away for a fourth-round draft pick to Philadelphia. At that time, there was some speculation and talk, and I think it was real that they would have been open to dealing Jarvis Landry. So if you're open to dealing a player before the trade deadline, does it make sense that you're going to go pay that guy, say, $13, $14, $15 million a year to go bring him back? I don't think so. That'd be my guess. So I find it hard to imagine that he's going to be back in Miami, but again, let's see what the market bears. A team like the Raiders, Jarvis Landry, from the previous question from Dominic, that would make a lot of sense to me. Raiders going and making a run at Jarvis Landry. But again, he's going to be expensive, and he should be expensive because he's a very good player. We'll see how that shakes out this offseason.
Hey, Adam. My name is Michael. And for my Ask Adam question, I want your opinion on who you think makes the Hall of Fame class this year. We're down to the final 15 candidates, including Ray Lewis, Randy Moss, Brian Urlacher, John Lynch, and many others. And do you think this is finally the year that Terrell Owens makes it? Thanks again. Thanks for all that you do.
Oh, thank you, Mike. I appreciate that. And what I would say to you about that is this. To me, Terrell Owens deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. But in a year where I do expect Randy Moss to get in, and he should be in, I don't know that you're going to get two wide receivers. It would be great if it happened, and it's deserving of happening. But I just have been in that room on six different occasions, and I could see how it's going to work. They're going to take the two senior nominees, as they do in most years, and then they're going to go on to the rest. And so I think Ray Lewis is going to get in. I think Randy Moss is going to get in. I think John Lynch has got a chance to get in this year. I don't know that Brian Urlacher is a first ballot Hall of Famer. He's definitely a Hall of Famer in my mind. We'll see whether the voters agree. And I will say this. You go into that room with ideas of what guys are, and then you listen to the explanations and the pros and the cons from various people, and it totally changes your mind. So whereas I'm saying Brian Urlacher is a Hall of Famer, but I don't know that he gets in the first ballot, I could have gotten in that room, listened to the explanations, and say, you know what, Brian Urlacher is a first ballot Hall of Famer. So there's a lot of strong presentations that are made that influence the voting process in the end. But going in, I would say you'll get both senior nominees. You'll get Randy Moss, you'll get Ray Lewis, and we'll see who else gets into this particular upcoming class.
Do you think they should eliminate the cap on how many people can get in a given year?
You know, listen, that's what makes it so difficult. There are guys that are backed up and haven't gotten in who are worthy, and it always amuses me, Josh, that a guy that gets in, like Lynn Swann, couldn't get in for, say, 10 years.
Right.
What made him a Hall of Famer in the 11th year?
Right.
He wasn't a Hall of Famer in 10 years. Like, that's crazy. Terrell Owens is a Hall of Famer, and he's going to get in at some point. So he wasn't a Hall of Famer the first 2, 3, 4, 5 years, whatever it may be, but he is when he gets in. I mean, that's crazy, too. Those limits, those caps do that for you. I think they have to be there because otherwise you'd have 12, 15, 20 people getting in every year, and it would lose some of its uniqueness and specialness that I think has to be there. And that's what makes it so difficult, controversial, topical, and why everybody argues about these selections year after year.
From one of the deepest questions we've gotten,
wow,
let's go to one of the shortest, if not the shortest, voicemail that we've gotten since we opened up to the callers.
Adam, MJ versus LeBron, who you got?
Wow, not even a name.
Right,
MJ versus LeBron. Well, I'll say this. right now MJ's got more championships, right? Six?
Yes.
And how many does LeBron have? Five? Four? Five?
No. He has three.
Yeah. I'm going MJ right now. And look, the other thing about that, though, is that LeBron seems to be getting better. Like, he is playing as well now as I believe he ever has. And the fact that LeBron comes up in the conversation with Michael Jordan, I think is a huge victory, right? Like, I think back in the day we would have wondered, is anybody going to be Michael Jordan? And now we're talking about, is he as good or better than Michael Jordan? That's the victory right there, but I'm still going to go Michael Jordan.
Just because of the rings? Because if you're going to use that argument, then go Bill Russell or, you know.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I'll say this to you, that LeBron may be the most talented basketball player who's ever played, but I still think I would take Michael for that competitive will, strong will, determination. He just, man, he refused to lose.
Fair enough. And it's Super Bowl week, a lot of attention on Bill Belichick. Of course, we had media day earlier in the week. So let's finish off this segment of Ask Adam with a little humor, shall we?
Hey, I was wondering, what do you think Bill Belichick, how does he start his day? What does he eat for breakfast? Do you think he's just like, when he orders, he's like, oh, let me get a, bagel and bagel with cream cheese and, orange juice. Maybe a little, over easy egg on the side. I mean, what do you think? What do you think he orders his breakfast like? Thank you.
It's a pretty good Belichick, Adam.
I think he's on to lunch.
Perfect way to end it. Love it. Love it. And hey, we love your voicemails, so keep them coming every single week. Our number, 860-506-5779.
So there's the Super Bowl week edition of the Adam Schefter podcast. A very special thanks to my good friend, Al Michaels, who was fantastic, to our ESPN NFL stats maven, Evan Kaplan, who once again delivered perspective this week, as he did every week all season long. I want to thank you, the listeners, for your Ask Adam voicemail questions. Please keep them coming every single week. And thank you to ZipRecruiter as well. Enjoy the Super Bowl, everybody.